Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about strategy to try and get science into science education. Now, this is going to be a long, complex podcast. I'm going on a cardiac walk at the moment, so you'll hear me breathe a few times, but it's used to be windy out here in New South Wales. Now it's nice and quiet, around a bit after midnight, so everything's calmed down. There's not a lot of traffic, so it'll probably be reasonably good broadcasting conditions. Now, as I've said, the actual topic of this is getting the science into science teaching or science education. And that's a sort of pretty explosive thing to say, that there is actually a lack of science in science education. And how could that possibly be if you are sitting kids in class so many hundred hours a year, teaching them science? How could you possibly not be teaching science education? I must admit, that was your automatic assumption, that when I went in as a science teacher, as a scientist going to science teaching, I thought, oh well, we're teaching science. And little by little, things didn't quite fit. It's sort of like you're in a play, and a period play, and someone just reads something totally out of context, and you say, oh, that can't be right. This is not the right way of doing it. And then the director, everyone else, says, oh no, we've got the show on. Let's continue. And so after a while. So to actually get into this, there's a bit of listening that you have to do, unfortunately, and a bit of thinking. So it's not a straightforward thing. It's not something that you'd pick up if you went in to a science teaching degree. You wouldn't pick it up, and you wouldn't pick it up unless a certain sequence of things have happened to you. So it might be, I don't know, to give an example, you might be employed working in a bank for a while, and then you suddenly realize that people are not actually collecting money correctly. When they're going through the notes and counting, they go, and it actually doesn't count, corresponds to the money that they're giving. And then when the person comes back and says, look, it doesn't work, it's they go through and they say the same sounds, and it goes through the same notes, and they give it back to you and say, yes, it does. That sort of closed system stuff, that if you're induced into it, or if you're a customer into it, if you're working in the system, it's very hard to pick that is going on. But by and by, you can have suspicions and uncover a whole complex culture in which this sort of thing goes on. So essentially, what we really need is some big wisdom encapsulations at this point in time to frame what's going on. And it's something that I'll establish through a few stories. Essentially, what I think is going on is that science teachers are taught by science teachers how to teach science. Now, if you go through that sequence, that sort of closed sequence, at no point does a scientist get into that loop. It's a scientist-free process, and essentially, a folk science can actually get into the process, and we've got a quite complicated system because it's built up by one layer, and then it's not working, and insurance and, you know, people, I might say insurance, people come in with support, paying more, encouragement and stuff like that. Science teaching awards, recognition of science teachers, all this entire sequence builds up. But the fundamental flaw here is that science teachers are teaching science teachers how to teach science, and that means that at no point does the actual quality of science go underneath the rigor that scientists operate on, which is peer review and publication and stuff like that. That's a different world. And they've created a sort of a subsection, a sort of like a theme park worker. So a lot of the, in a theme park, there'll be a person in a blacksmith shop, actually not trained in blacksmithing, but dressed up as a blacksmither, producing a few bits of wares, have a few bits of wares on the shelves that have been bought commercially, and talking about it, and they're inside the village, but actually they're not actually a blacksmither. And if they, over the generations, teach the next people coming up, the actual knowledge of blacksmithing can disappear. That may be one example of it. So getting back to it, we've got this system in which the science is excluded. And I'm looking at a way of reintroducing scientists into the actual system. And it's not an easy thing to do, because the system has evolved to keep scientists out. And so there's various things, sort of at a high level. This is production of material, which is automated, next generation lessons produced by machines, with machine learning, all this type of stuff. You'll see that I'm starting to do that with automated learning, so automated synthetic lessons, which take a podcast and break it up, and I'll give a long podcast on how that's actually done. I'm sort of beginning to move forward, so I realise that when people are interested, it's best for me to actually produce successive written document. People can actually understand things a lot better when it's written down, when you're doing something innovative. So, in that case, this is sort of a development, or what do you call a strategic, it's not a weapons development, but it's a systems development, which you develop offline, you test, and you can bring in, and you bring it in right across the system, so you have a product which, this is a lesson, a dynamic computer-generated lesson, and it has small components which can be pulled in and pulled out by scientists and actually improve it, like completely bypass the teaching culture system. Now, that's a long-range process. Again, the second strategy is to having research the history of science, the history of teaching, select lessons or experiments which really undo the entire process of teachers being taught to teach by teachers who teach science, and they teach them how to teach science. So at no point does the actual science get in. And the selection of these key experiments and lessons come in a key knowledge of two things. Knowing how the teachers who teach teachers how to teach science, because they've been taught by teachers, you know, it's years and years, knowing some of their weaknesses. One of their major weaknesses is a very poor understanding of science itself, and understanding by the proxy of celebrity. So there's one experiment by Einstein, which he got wrong, which touches quantum mechanics and just unplugs the whole system. And that's something that, so besides the complete replacement of the system which I'm aiming at, this is with synthetic lessons. Now, another aim of, I'm breathing hard because I'm going up a hill, another aim of the synthetic lesson is to create consistency, quality and quantity from just not myself but a range of people. So when I come back into the ring, the assumption is that I'll come back as they would, as someone else without the training, ability, and so there'll be an expectation that I won't be able to actually lay down for each lesson, website integrated, homework, worksheets, metrics, podcasts of the lesson, podcasts of the self-learning stuff, a whole sequence of things that I won't be able to reduce that lesson after lesson after lesson. And that's my objective, to actually come in and actually blast it away. Now, I don't know whether I can do that. And of course, I didn't know whether I could do this sort of a long time ago. But it was necessary to just take one step at a time and sort of crawl up out of rehab physically and mentally, and sort of keep the mental challenge just out of reach. So I had to keep on going, keep on producing and stuff like that. So there's that level, and finding these key lessons which are built on that. Now, one of the things I'd perhaps like to describe, and sort of the important emerging market here, is people who have been taught science poorly, and now with the good explanation, many years off, retirees, people, things like that, there's a market, initial market out there, is not competing with a primary market, and that's students coming in. It's students who've been damaged to actually pick them up and support them. And this is I suppose a flaw in that in this entire science teachers been taught by teachers, science teachers how to teach science, where they themselves have done that. Part of that mantra is that we own the science teaching process, the knowledge of science, and if you don't get out of it, we don't want to know about you. And so you've got this entire class of people, market, that is deemed not good enough, and you can see a fair amount of stuff has blown over here as I'm walking up. So there's that market to try and get at. Now, as I said, going back to the bank, it's not until you're working there for a time that you pick up a few, hey, this doesn't work out. This is like counting notes. And one of the advantages of encountering an error, or looking at the nature of an error just quietly, it gives you two things: what the error is and what the psychological crutches people are using to not actually do the task. So one of the major psychological cruxes is understanding by proxy. I don't understand this, but here's Einstein and he did understand it. That's it. That's my argument. And you can see that coming across. But what I want to talk about is something called electron occupancy. Now, where where do you start with the misconceptions built here? And the basic thing is that you've just got to realize that you can't say, interrupt a teacher and say, look, that's a misconception, because their entire environment is involved in it. And what they will teach, a teacher will do, is draw a classical Bohr atom, as was drawn in 1917, with a small dot for the nucleus, which has got the positive charge, and electrons confined to orbits, circular orbits, pretty much the way that Mars and Earth are confined to molecular orbits. We don't move in, and those orbits will be circles, concentric circles. We call shells for some reason. They call shells in some sort of weird, rather than tracks, they're called shells, because the idea that perhaps they could be three dimensional, they can move around the place. And if I can say, there's a sort of cosmic connection with this, in that really the first symbol of science and thinking was the same symbol that they drew. This is Pythagoras's monad symbol. That is the symbol for some sort of concept, some sort of basic unit of stuff. And he drew a circle with a line around it. So historically, it's got all this reverberating history with it, which of course the people doing it are unaware of it. It's sort of like Masonic signals and sayings that people echo in, and it feels right, and it feels to connect a long way back. They can see this diagram of the atom, so it's on posters, charts, movies, blackboards. It's the blackboard atom. And for this they have the classical electron, which is not like the quantum mechanical electron, the electron as imagined in 1917 and thrown out quite conclusively by 1926, although there are some people who, in thinking of it, haven't advanced. So one of those people for this was hard to reconcile with Einstein, of all people, which if you are in the process of proof by proxy, that means that you don't have to actually bother with the actual direction that the rest of science has taken. So how could this happen? Well, how could people stick with 1917 physics and science? Well, what I think is my hypothesis, my pattern that I propose pattern, is this: science teachers teaching science teachers how to teach science from experience of how you teach science. So the science and how you teach it comes across. And it is interesting that if you propose anything else, they cannot take new science. They need, how do I teach it? Give me lesson plans. Teach me how to teach it. This is an important thing to actually understand, that science teachers are in a rut, because their currency of thought is how to teach, rather than actual what the concept is. So you have to be up at what the concept is here. And we're getting back to the atom, which we draw as a circle. And the first two elements, hydrogen, helium, is a single circle with occupancy of one and two electrons for helium. And you just have to take it that as the atoms nucleus gets bigger, the number of circles increases, and the number of electrons in each orbital or shell increases. Now, it's actually shell is the actual correct term, but it's like going back to the 1960s or in the past, back to the future, and you just can't use modern terms. You have to speak in ancient terms, and so in quantum mechanics, an electron exists in an orbital, but it doesn't orbit. It doesn't go in an orbit around the atom. So this was the ownership of the words and the history of the words tend to slew teaching across. So it's easier to teach incorrect ideas aligned with the nomenclature associated, built up around those incorrect ideas. There's very few people who know the difference between the concept and nomenclature. They would call that illiteracy, which is obviously illiteracy from one level, in that look, I see it's very, very much like saying someone who can speak well and cogently and use great command of the English language is much better than a stammerer, but we're not actually interested in the ability to entertain us or stuff like that. We're interested in the ethics that stammerer may be saying, look, there's a deadly virus around and you're all going to die unless you do these things. Now, the elegant person is more literate, but the stammerer has actually has got all these obstacles in front of them. I'm just taking it really, really slow here as I'm building up a few slopes here. So you've got this process here in which we're entering this regime, and we've got this idea of who is literate and who can teach, and then the actual ethics of teaching people incorrect stuff. Now, the orbitals are of a certain way. It's sort of like being able to work your way into a system, learning a nursery rhyme, and the nursery rhyme clues you to look at the right places at the right time, or some of the right places at some of the right times. And you can say, is that nursery rhyme successful? And yes, that nursery rhyme is successful, and you can measure relative success of that nursery rhyme. So you can get certain people to go into a situation with a nursery rhyme. If they know the nursery rhyme well, they will see a greater fractions of things primed to reward you for knowing that nursery rhyme. Now, someone who knows, can't remember the nursery rhyme as well, will not do as well in this process. But if the nursery rhyme itself is inadequate and essentially a rhyme or a connection, a cultural thing which we teach from an early age, and if it, say, tells you about the main street and an old clock tower and an old jail, just huge jail, and you miss the new freeway and the supermarket because that's not in the nursery rhyme, you can actually set up a system which qualifies people. It's people who can't do the nursery rhyme, people who can. And the logic is that the people, it's sort of like a negative trap. You can get be fairly sure. Well, you can get all false positives and false negatives and stuff like that. You can start ascending people, and their view of a situation is in terms of the nursery rhyme in which they're going ahead. So really, the way we teach the atom is this nursery rhyme thing, because electrons don't orbit, they're not small, and they don't go in tracks. But the first track has got 2. The next track has got 8 electrons in it. Now, this is the next shell, and that does the next line of the periodic table. So it goes, the first one, started in helium, the next 8, as you clock around, is hydrogen, lithium, beryllium, boron, carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, fluorine, neon, all those elements. Each one has got one extra electron in there. Now, the next shell has, well, we teach that it's got, let's try to work this out. Oh yeah, it's got 8, and that's what we teach. And the next shell's got 8, and it's got the next set of elements, sodium, magnesium, aluminium, silicon, sulfur, phosphorus, aluminium, silicon, phosphorus, sulfur, chlorine, and argon. So there's 8 there. And then the next, so we say, well, that's enough, 8 in that shell. The next one out there, the next shell is 2, and which is true. So by the, we teach the first 4 shells, in actual fact. And this is all very good, but this is teaching via nursery rhyme, basically. And what people say who are programmed to teach in nursery rhymes will say, the occupancy of shells goes in the following way. 2, 8, 8. And the next one can go up to 18. Because if I count the number of electrons after potassium and calcium, that fills up this 18 on that row. Sort of very simplistic nursery rhyme thing. And we're going to have to go back in and say that's incorrect. Way that people teach, and this is the way it's been taught, is that the occupancy, and this is by every single HSC chemistry teacher I have spoken to, and more, it gets more, they say that it is, and this is in Australia, in New South Wales, 2, 8, 8, 18. Now, that is the fourth circle can take 18 electrons around in it. Now, you can show them a picture of the next up there, and that's clearly not true. And that just gets fear and anger. And a teacher protested and said, look, I was taught by my chemistry teacher, professor at UWS, University of Western Sydney, or Western Sydney University as it's called now. And I forgot his name is Tobin or Toby or it's T something or other. But he came out to give a talk on how to use a particular type of technology. So I got his name and I said, oh, you're a chemist, I'd like to keep in contact with you, as you do. And it turned out that this particular person, this is, if I can say that, the two, let's try and do it, 2, 8, 8, 18 is nursery rhyme stuff. It's wrong. The actual things go 2, 8, 18, 32, and it just goes as 2, was it 2 n squared? So n squared goes as 1, 2, 9, 16, 25. 2n goes 2, 8, 18, 32, 50. Okay? And that's quantum mechanics. That's what we're going to get to. But from the nursery rhyme style, I came across and I said to this professor, not in an offensive way, look, people believe this, this, and I've been taught this. He said, well, matter of fact, it is true. Bing, bang, because I'm a quantum physicist. I know what I'm talking about. But he thinks I'm a teacher. No, no. And then he tries to strong-arm me into this 2-8-8-18. However, I've just got a teaching position in an Iowa State University. Good on you. He's off. So he's able to present this way of thinking, and I listened to a bit about his really lack of understanding about how this all worked, and I only know this group of understanding because it's not just one mad person and one nursery rhyme. It's actually a chatter of nursery rhymes. They have a pair of electrons in an orbital, as actually a little pair of electrons moving out and back. You get all this crazy stuff going on. And I have visited people in isolated labs, and it's actually sampled this type of thing. It's like a disease outbreak. You can see different, you're looking for like mesothelioma. This is the cancer due to asbestos. Well, that's interesting. There's a clock ticking sound around the place here. That is weird. Okay. So it's not just that you just don't find one patient dying. You see a whole series of patients dying at scenes and people. And obviously, the idea of teaching something correct en masse to a huge number of people is disturbing. That would be big TV news. It can't possibly be right. I think I'll press the "you're an idiot" button and white at you and undermine you, this type of stuff. And I just sort of don't realise that. And I say, "Hey, mate, what are you teaching?" And they just go, "And is that right?" They might ask, 1 in 10 people would say, "Is that right?" And I'll say, "No, that's wrong in actual fact. What do the majority of people, or the majority of people agree with what you're teaching?" That's what's wrong. Okay, well, that's it. I'm not too concerned. It doesn't really matter. But it, of course it does. It does overall. So, there's this thing called electron configuration. And the long and short of it, it's a really basic tool in chemistry. You need electron configuration to draw little dot signs to actually construct molecules and chemicals on the blackboard. And so it's a fundamental tool. It's not a dead end. It's an essential tool. It's like teaching people to navigate using a nursery rhyme. And then they can get the next things right, and you reinforce this nursery rhyme. And to the structure that level that they do teach it, they don't ever come across examples or push too deeply on example where the nursery rhyme fails. They just say, "Well, we can't teach that because that gives the wrong answer, and it gives us the wrong answer about we are not testing, do they know it? Do they know real science? We're testing, do they know the nursery rhyme? So it sounds like a conspiracy theory, and in fact it's a conspiracy theory, but with no central conspirator. It's just people being sucked into the world of the nursery rhyme. So if you would like, the evil person in this is this nursery rhyme, which was given up, and people have played with it. I suppose you could say it's sort of a bit like religion or superstition, something like that. If I can just put an aside for a moment, we're not the only culture which has things that you just can't do, or you are culturally locked in by a series of methods that no one can break. I won't deal too much because I've got to with the Aboriginal culture, but there's certain male knowledge, female knowledge, complicated system of skins and marriages and stuff like that, and how that entire process works with modern Western culture. It's a bit of a hard thing, but you really can't touch it from the outside person. You can't touch it or argue with it. There are some people who have to counsel with it, but your counselling doesn't work. I don't know. It is a really complex thing. So at least I've had the benefit of interacting with the Aboriginal Indigenous culture in a way, and seeing some of these problems are quite intractable. They're positive and intractable. This is a sweeping statement. It's in as much that it's a sweeping statement. It's not necessarily true. It's not necessarily that you can actually use, but in the Indigenous culture, a little bit, if I have knowledge, the idea of someone knowing something is really, really important. So one of the strange things is that I've asked from time to time to be taught Aboriginal language, and that was that's apparently a no-go area. I don't know why, but that's real back off. You're stepping into our territory, and so there's the idea of knowledge. That would sound strange, but it's something to understand, and to understand, to respect the fact that you're excluded. That's not the person speaking, that's the culture speaking, and you trip up. So I know not to ask to learn Aboriginal language. Another aspect, so this is sort of the same thing. I don't know if you can see our culture teaching a nursery rhyme for science is not much different from this protected knowledge here. The other very interesting thing is this holographic knowledge. That is, at a certain point in time, Sydney University had tutors to help the local Aboriginal community, whatever it is. A lot of these things happen low-key without sort of a big song and dance. But what would happen is that you would teach one person in the community a concept to a certain level, and then after probing it would go very well. But then after that, it wouldn't go any further. And the reason was, and these are urbanized people, okay? That we don't have to know it because he knows it, and if I need to ever get it done, I can rely on him. Which sounds good and very practical. Say if you're in a tribal culture, you want to learn how something's done, but you can't pull people out of the field and educate them and run primers on various things. I just got attacked by a big white moth. A moth here. It's going to be interesting here as I walk into this section. I think it sort of feels there's no moon up at the moment, and I expect a fair amount of wildlife in this regime as I walk along. Okay. So there's this holographic knowledge, and in a sense, we in our places, I don't know it, but I don't. My professor knows it, who knows someone else, and it's sort of a little bit more complicated in the terms of he knows where the water hole is or how to get out of this situation. I can call on him to do it, and he will tell it. And it's it's also very interesting, the Aboriginal culture, in terms of they have song lines. So they have these big songs which describe things, and basically the song is a map. So you can actually go along and you can say, when you think, and they will see the shape of a hill and know to walk around it because there's a song, it's a song line, and a lot of the maps, a lot of the Aboriginal art are geographic maps and systems knowledge. So this crocodile here will represent a system at a certain level. It's interesting to know, but we are actually not that much different from it in a different term, except we sort of use the knowledge, we sort of grind the knowledge into a generic system and then relocate people within a system. It's not the society, the social culture, to take these ideas around. So what happens is we get a whole group of people, we grind them through a school system, then we retask them around the place. And so this is what I really think is this sort of social knowledge, nursery rhyme knowledge. It's from an earlier era, and we've industrialized it, but we haven't actually moved beyond the village. It's i.e. that the teachers are sort of like a little village tribe, which have got their sort of in-tribe thing. They've got this sort of little society of being in tribe, and they teach in a tribal way, and they wind up doing a lot of damage. Well, yeah, quite frankly, a lot of damage to people. There's a lot of people poor of science, a lot of people who attempt to learn science as a nursery line, and are just told you're not as good at it. And of course, what happens is that when you use a nursery rhyme and you've got all this thing around it, you have to be actually trained to see things relevant to your nursery rhyme. There you go. So this nursery rhyme is, if you said London Bridge has fallen down or something like that, you would say there are 2, 8, 8, 18 electrons in my little atom, that type of stuff, when it's actually not there. Now let's stop and have a step into quantum mechanics. Now, when we talk about quantum mechanics, we're talking, you're now listening to quantum mechanics in an era before I and my science buddies have cracked the system. So what's happening? Okay, so two part plan. One, build robotic software to produce quality enhanced science high grade lessons and launch them with full scientific feedback. We're going to do it. It's not a question of are we allowed to? It was a concept before, but I'm pretty confident now with synthetic lessons and being able to cut things up, we can come in at a far higher level. That is, a synthetic lesson is broken up into parts, you know, microscopic parts. Each microscopic part can be analysed and rebuilt, and you get as a material a cutting edge thing which hasn't been filtered through all these textbooks and salespeople and all this riffraff. And unlike a textbook which sits there, we can actually introduce smart technology, artificial intelligence, feedback, and at the moment, yeah, it's only just a few synthetic lessons, but what's coming will succeed. And I can say that having automated things, people go, oh, when you first bring in a robot, oh, my worker can do better than that. And then first week, it equals the worker, and then equals the worker, goes 24/7 with precision. I wish I could sort of describe some of the things happening. So it will happen. It's got the... So that's coming through. And again, we've got the nursery rhyme stuff. It requires a little bit more knowledge, but coming up, there will be nursery rhyme busters of experiments coming up. And that's what I want to aim to get. But that hasn't happened yet. So you're going to have to listen to something which is potentially upsetting to you. Okay, if you have been taught properly, not only have you learnt your nursery rhyme, you've learnt a behaviours associated with protecting the nursery rhyme. Your objective really is to reinforce teaching culture by protecting a nursery rhyme, which is this 2/8/8/18. Now, I know overseas they don't teach it. It just happens to be in New South Wales, in this area, they have gone to it. And what's really interesting is people who are taught certain things. I have a teacher I'm thinking of who has understood one thing, understood the other, and you've got one page to the other, on one page, one left and right, and cannot actually superimpose the two. You can't put the triangle on the square and say it's unequal. That's a triangle, that's a square, what's the problem? Aren't they different? No. It's really interesting around here. Coming down, coming to the Ford. Okay, so what we're saying here is, we're at a point in history where we're beginning to roll out the quantum mechanics and tell you about it. Now, firstly, there's the factor of two, why there's one electron, or why there can be two electrons in the first orbital. That's due to a combination of special relativity and quantum mechanics, which you churn through and you get out something called spin. And these are the two electrons. There's always a factor of two. We can come at that point and tell you about spin, but I do have this Christmas bauble, which will begin to spin for no reason. I can put a current into it and it will spin, pushing itself left and right against the universe. And it's the Einstein de Haas spin experiment, and there's just so much to unpack, but that's out there. So I can now, confident knowing that I can access this. This is coming up with the experiments. We'll be able to tell you why there's two. And then we have the system of how do I cut an electron? So that is, electron is not a point. It's this big fluffy ball, and I can create node lines or twists in it. So it's made by getting fluff and putting a twist in it, And so if I've got a big fluffy ball and I do a single twist on it, it will have a zero in the centre. It'll be as if I have some dough and I've got some knife and I cut through it. And that's the, if I cut through it directly with a knife, that's an angular cut. But the most basic cut is cuts circles, or like circle cups. You roll out, say, a blue dough, make a ball of it, and then you coat it with a yellow dough on the outside, and that's effectively got a cut, a spherical cut in it. It's very hard to do it with a knife, but electrons do it, and that's a spherical cut. You can, so that's your first type of cut. And S electrons, the ones, the two in there, are ones which are, have got spherical cuts in them. And then you can have a single cut with your knife, cut it right through, or a double cut, or a three cut. And you can cut it different ways. So you've actually got four ways that you can cut an electron. That's radially, single, double, triple. Radially is S blocks. Single cut is P block at the other end with the rare gases and starting with boron, aluminium, gallium, indium, thallium going down there, bound on that side. That's single cut. Double cut is your D block. This is the ions in the, that central group of 10 by 4. Then that 2 by 14 block is at the, it's a triple cut. A few exceptions in there. And that's the periodic table with cuts. Each shell contains a two and a six, which is so there's you can cut through with one cut three ways. The X, well, for a radial cut, it's one way. For a single cut, it's three ways. For a double cut, it's in three dimensions, there's five. Two times five is ten. Or for a triple cut, there's seven. Seven ways that you can go through. Pretty amazing. So this is sort of like origami on steroids. So how it goes is one times two, two. One times two plus three times two is eight. One times two plus three times two, three times two plus five times two is 18. That's in your next shell. And so that's what we all go. That's the correct answer that I hope people overseas do. That's 2, 8, 18. And the next one is 1 times 2, 3 times 2, 5 times 2, and 7 times 2 is 32. And then your next one through. Is that right? I've got 1, 2, 5, 14. I just got to work it out. I think it's about normally up to 15. You know, get up. Up to the next occupancy of shells. Now, We don't necessarily have the nursery rhymes yet. We do are teaching by sort of nursery rhymes at the moment. So I'm just doing this as a long podcast to keep me going. So I don't know how long this will take. I'm losing my breath here as I'm going up this large hill. And the aim is just to build my stamina up as I go here. So the overall thing is to have change, you have to sort of understand what you're changing and the capability of changing. And what we have is a culture, a community of myth and superstition, who teach via mechanisms appropriate to the written literacy or the understanding at the time. So the Aboriginal culture didn't have written maps. Distances, they would sing everything across culture coming out of the Industrial Revolution. These teachers who didn't have scientific degrees, didn't spend time in the labs, used a similar method, a sort of a song line, where they sing the wrong thing, unfortunately. Where they sing a limited story. So, if you can imagine, the song lines don't take account to some dumps uranium mine in the middle of their land or builds a freeway. Song line just doesn't cope. Yet the song line is culturally important. So I think we have to recognise that I wonder what that is. Oh, it's a speed bump. Teaching is not something to go in and rock the boat with. You're just going to get a whole lot of angry feudal serfs coming along, worrying about the lord of the manor being rocked about the place. You don't do that, but what you do is you, while they're ploughing, you suddenly deploy a satellite controlled tractor with genetically modified crops to come in and just start doing a few fields by remote control, in net hooked up, and start giving away free food at the side thing without ever getting a pitchfork revolution. So I gave some of the quantum mechanical description behind how you get the system going by counting symmetries. And this is more true to what being able to walk a bit better. This is more true to what the atoms are actually doing. The atoms are not people. They're not things that respond to a nursery rhyme. They're things that respond to the symmetry of their components. And the symmetry of the components give their properties. That's the thing, like the grain of wood gives the property of it. It's not necessary the way that you mark it out. It's the actual grain with them. So, yeah, we're at a stage where where it's not there, that we've got conflict on our hands, and you're looking at this process, and you can actually start to read if they have problems with the actual teaching of science, the actual structure of science, they're going to have problems in other areas. And it's exactly that. And so rather than understand the symmetry of the skills of people from the outside and how that skill has worked in the outside world and how it works, could work on the inside world and modify the inside world to be more outside resilience. They're not thinking in terms of symmetry and what is there and what it tells you. They're thinking in terms of very much the nursery rhyme. I have a document which is a nursery rhyme of how things should be taught, and I can say it very loud. A lot of people say it very loud, and it is the dominant nursery rhyme. And we can say that this, you know, measured against this nursery rhyme. Let's have a look at this over here. Okay, so I'm just looking at whether it's a lizard. You don't get lizards at this time of night. So there's all these on rocks around the place. Gets these lizards sitting out. It looks as though there was one. One there. Yeah, so it's not... one has to stop and say, this is not left to just this. It's a sign. It's not an isolated thing. It's a sign of the culture, and we're not engaged. You can't really engage in the culture because the culture, when threatened, can actually respond in an ever more exaggerated ways. And so recognizing this, you can step back and give other systems time to respond. So one of the interesting things is that if you teach people to think via nursery rhymes, they're very quick, they're very instinctive, and they're very responsive in a test situation. That is stimulus nursery rhyme result. And so there's also a certain timing assumed in that nursery rhyme thinking. And so your other systems can be more resilient, that is, operate on a far greater time scale. So this is the software response is operated on a multiple year time scale. So the response was an instance, and the response is on a much larger time scale. Again, the nursery rhyme type of thinking, you basically can assemble resources necessary for your next task, or you can't. It's very digital, linear, sort of almost two-dimensional way of going across. Whereas this, you can keep on modifying to achieve your objective. So say with podcasts, you slowly ramp up international community, ramp up different areas. So there are people different markets. It's not necessarily your captive market, and you may not want to hit them first. You may want to actually do another market first, and market is a secondary capture market. And also to see how it's not as simple that there's a teacher market. There's also the science explainer market, running quests to go on science shows, and they're very limited in that they have their in-house source, and they have a checklist of things to go. So if they have a story to go through, if it's an institution, a high-ranking person, artificial intelligence, life, a question, an article, you can get up. But the actual deeper understanding isn't there. And so what is interesting is that the science communication market is allied, is paralleled to their customer, which is on a nursery rhyme wicket. So often they will communicate or sing their story in terms of the nursery rhymes that their market can understand. So they will go through and say, quantum mechanics is weird. Quantum mechanics does the reality. There's Einstein said this, people said that, sort of not move the debate forward or not move it here. So they're sort of almost do a disservice. Science communicators do a disservice by translating what is outside into non-threatening nursery rhyme languages. And at the base of nursery rhymes, obviously, is mysticism. It connects you to a society, a social understanding, an age, which is a long time in the past, but it is true by rite and ritual. So you can imagine doing London Bridges, burning down a tissue, we all fall down, something like that. You do it as a kid, and somehow it's got this currency, a legitimacy. So all children have been taught, at least in Australia, 2-8-18, to 8-8-18, by people who they trust, people who, when they're in a crisis, in a more complex world, their family's breaking up, they've hurt their knee, they've got bullying, they can rely to this person who can provide support and link them in and successfully teach the nursery rhyme, which is taught ahead now. If it was just 2-8-18, that would be simple. Surely we could do it here, but it's not. It's this view of electron permeates explanation of conductors, semiconductors, thousands of different things, and a student coming up can say, look, that teacher there is not singing nursery rhymes. I'm going to actually learn nursery rhymes myself, because that actually gets me through exams, and they're really good. And so what we are tending to produce is excellent nursery rhyme learners, but they're increasingly the nursery rhyme is leading them into a landscape which we have long since vacated hundreds of years ago literally hundreds of years ago. And the story of vacation, why they're walking in a ghost town of experiments and history and books, and why it seems a vacant ghost town and people are off looking at different things, that seems a mystery to them. They can't see if they've booked a ticket to this destination, they can't to actually then comprehend another story of people moving out, when it's actually been built up as a, we're going to such and such a village, it's a gold mining village, they've struck gold, there's gold fever, this is here, they go in, it's a theme park, long since lost, they don't know, the story of or what we did next, what we're thinking next. And in a real sense, I'm looking at what you can do to restructure things such that you can grab these people back. So you've got people lost in the theme park. You've got people who are employed by the theme park and employed to sing nursery rhymes to people, and you've got this two group of people who have moved on and looking back. Now what's happened to me is that I've gone through a two-step rematerialization back in yesteryear. The one was first going from science to teach, being a scientist, going back to teach science. And the second one is in the process of a crucifixion that they've set up, been whiffed out and then put back into a sort of laboratory space to rebuild myself. So, okay, I am truly a bionic rebuilt teacher, which is really interesting. So because I'm doing a walk at this stage through the really quiet bush at the moment, it's really enjoyable walk here. Yeah, so I really am a bionic teacher. So my biological heart was going well, I suppose. Had a key feature which people can replace with a biological compatible pig valve. They've replaced it with a carbon super valve from jet and rocket engines, rocket technology. When I say rocket technology, it's the technology they've coated the valve with, is the tip of ballistic missiles have this material, or the back of your mobile phone has this material, or the surrounding of nuclear nuclear fuel has this coating, this super duper coating. So they have taken, so although in the nursery rhyme line in the theme park you're taken ill, you know what happens is Florence Nightingale comes in and there's a whole lot of 18th 19th century things happening, and shucks, this person wasn't doing their script is going to go. But what's happened is that teams of people have rebuilt me, not once but twice, to get me up there. Then something else has happened. It's like this dream happened, is this quite severe reset button. That is, we've lost all the main memories. It's all gone down. Well, there's memories there, but key operating systems have gone. Circuit's gone, and wait on. There's a pulse showing here. There's a line showing here. He's reassigning chips which were aimed for one thing to other tasks and remanaging and rebuilding. It's called neuroplasticity. So, I theoretically, I don't know whether I should be, this question about whether I'd be able to drive or walk or feed myself. And now, this basic rebuild, has come on. And so in the basic rebuild, I've gone back and had to reassess. Am I doing it right? No, that's incorrect. Modify. Go, push harder. Keep on pushing. Go back. Identify flaws. Some of the flaws is not being able to do things again, not being able to do certain areas of math, but some of the flaws is incorrectly taught maths. Investigate. Work out the bits of equations that I've lost or hadn't picked up on, or things that I've been taught incorrectly. And then this, in terms of the actual process of rebuild, it doesn't have a boundary. It has a boundary of things which were incorrectly programmed in the first place, but then going backwards, the actual social program which is running has to be rewired. And with this rehab, you've got to look at it. And in terms of what is the objective, what's going ahead, well, let's design a system which will set me up to be able to teach. And having been trained on systems design, this is a long walk. On systems design, what do we want to achieve? We have to achieve, unfortunately, until we actually solve the riddle of nursery rhyme versus actual science, until we solve that riddle and solve a whole series of other riddles at different levels, we have to achieve the maximum input, and that is moving the podcast into a podcast on topics, moving a podcast such that it gets reformulated out as lessons to do it. And that's a long-term thing, but the benefit, you can set that up such that you get certain benefits along the way. So with podcasting, the ability to speak for a long time, I think I've spoken for a long time, string things together, and it's not necessarily a good thing. I've just come here. So in podcasts, going along, there's sort of rehab benefits, but also pitfalls, and that is that if you spend your entire time speaking into a dictaphone for hours on a day, when it comes to actually speaking coherently to another person, you can actually switch on dictaphone and they go, "What the heck? How's this? Do you shut up?" So that's a disadvantage. But bring up your typing speed, and then produce that into written documents, and then upgrade your written document one after the other to go ahead here. So the actual long-term objective is there. Then there's the so getting there, the actual steps, it's sort of repurposing and redoubling the advantage of different steps along the way. So in the Einstein to Hass pendulum, or the Thompson effect, two key things which go up, I can start to, it's a bit hard to work out exactly where this is all at. I can't really recognize exactly where I am. So, they're actually doing road work around here. And putting more gates, probably a good thing. Sorry for that. But in terms of being more sophisticated, knowing that in the nurse drawing world, things have to happen really quickly and decisively. Episodes and steps with a beginning, end, acknowledgement, fantasy, attachment, and so it only ever builds a local reputation economy or narrative to be put into that nursery rhyme world. The actual building of experiments can be done in such a way that the actual asking of questions can actually probe a help. So, in, say, for instance, the Thompson experiment, I have to heat up a copper rod, run a current through it, and measure the temperature to do those processes. But I have gone through and then approached one person to go through a network to see who can help and to practice communication. Now, it is then practice communication in such a way that I can actually go through, tag a few people. When it goes to negative, get some, start to generate some guidance along there. But then also reformulate it from the complex narrative world that teachers tend to put it together. This fairy tale narrative. I really can't recognize where I am. This is because they have, I can't believe that. Wow. They've gone through and really tracked up places. Find out what's going on. But I know where I am, because I've seen some maps, sorry, some signs, but I really can't recognize a lot of it in this light. And there's no wildlife, no wombats, no kangaroo, anything. It's pretty suspicious. So why is this? It's been really wild weather, so I really don't know. Normally you would hear something. If there's a water course, you can always hear the wallabies around the water. But up around here, where it's drier, the feed's not so good. So it really depends where the kangaroos are. Okay. Yep. Getting back to it, there is this... Okay, they've gone through here with a grader. Wow, I'm sure. I really wonder what this is all about. And you can feel the track is very smooth. So they have done a bucket of work around here. Okay, it's being able to actually recast a project where the objective is different from. There's publication, inclusion, propagation, all these other factors which are not normally considered in a project. So, for instance, there's the Einstein de Haas pendulum. Can I re-modify this such that it actually upgrades from the 1920s experiment to go to a new generation. So at the moment, this pendulum, so let's talk about this pendulum for a little while. This pendulum is a lump of iron, and you have it as a torsion pendulum, that is, it can spin left and right, it spins clockwise until it winds up the spring it's on, or the wire it's on, and the wire eventually resists it and starts to spin it off the opposite direction until it goes the other way. So it goes clockwise, quickly, slows down, starts going anti-clockwise, speeds up, slows down, then clockwise again. It's a pendulum. Now, you put this iron in a flipping magnetic field, and you flip the spin of the electrons in there, and that spin of electrons is like a gentle rocking motion, and flipping the spin. And Einstein missed all this, so there's a little bit of a story there. But what I want to do is, I don't know whether this, I really don't know if this is going to work. This is a lug with the coils attached to the lug and the current coming down the wire which spins it. And this is a Christmas bauble that you put on your Christmas tree, but it's run by power into it. It flips the magnetic field, and it will start to spin. So you can imagine a Christmas bauble. It's a bauble which takes about half an hour. Starts to spin left, spin right, you know, clockwise, anti-clockwise. Just oscillate here. Now, this is still spooky. I find this walking on a new graded road in this area. I'm used to watching my step and rocks and everything. This is just like walking in a suburban piece of suburban real estate. And of course, the other thing is that you can't hear your footfall because they've got this beautiful dust on the track. Track coming up. Now the thing about this is that normally a motor pushes against something. So if you got a motor, it will kick back. You know, I don't know if you've got your motorcycle, your front tire goes up as you go, or as you go in the air in your stroke, I think it's that if you brake, you'll tumble forward. I can't remember what it is. As you brake, you can lift your tire up and down. You can adjust your angular momentum. There, it's pushing up, but it's usually the angular momentum. Increase of angular momentum is equated by a pushing back. So you would expect in a normal bauble, swinging back and forth, to actually put a torsion for it to move. It's got to receive a push against something. Now, in the Einstein de Haas one, it's pushing against the whole universe. It's actually pushing against a dimension. And this is something profound. Now, whether this has the cut through to completely dissolve the nursery rhyme world, I don't know. But it definitely has, can be reformulated in a scientific paper way to get academic scientific interest in it. And pick up. There are different things. There are different times involved. So I have sort of fairly infinite time, an infinite number of times, that if my first year science people don't respond, I can actually put the next person, and if my communication is blocked by the education department saying, no, we don't want this type of person, that's okay, they can block it, but it's not going to be an effective thing. It's diffusing through on a large front in very small steps. It's not got the actual characteristics of the a nursery rhyme cultural thing where something has to be done and recognised within a time frame, within so many characters have to be moved in position. It's now broken free from that, and I can gradually get little components together and expand. If I can't get it done in Australia, I can see if I can get it done overseas. And it really doesn't matter. It's just slowly pushing it forward. Okay, well, this is one thing. I've got a little more walking to do here before I turn back. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.